Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I imagine you've probably heard about what's going on in Sudan in terms of how it affects the West, in that there are lots of refugees potentially, which I'm sure going to wash up on our shores relatively soon. But I'm not necessarily going to focus on that aspect. I'm going to focus on...
You mentioned a minute, though. It's just like crisis in Antarctica. Britain must take them all.
Yes.
I mean, that really is how the world works, but sorry to derail that.
But yeah, Sudan, not exactly close to Britain. And there are people who are saying, yes, we need to take in them all.
But what is happening in Sudan?
But what is happening? Well, some bad things are happening is what's happening. But I'll be breaking them down.
Usually all I hear is rainbows from Sudan, but this is a change.
I know. So, worth pointing out that Sudan is here. It is on sort of northeast Africa, south of Egypt, sort of northwest of, or northeast of Ethiopia as well. And it is also split into two. You have Sudan and South Sudan, and I'm going to be explaining why that is. But now you know where it is. I'm going to mention, I have talked about Africa before, believe it or not, in this article, which is one of the ones I'm actually quite proud of. And I looked at the country with the lowest average IQ, which is 59 for Equatorial Guinea, and just tried to figure out why that might be. And spoiler alert, it's because there is a horrific political situation and there has been no economic development. But you can both read and listen to this if you are a paying subscriber to our website, which I suggest you do, because there is an enormous amount of stuff there for you to look at.
I mean, this isn't really a spoiler, still go and read it. But the best thing about it is I remember you telling me, you just sort of like, well, this 80 IQ family have taken over the whole place. Lukewarm IQ, but, you know, over there.
That makes you a king, yeah.
So,
but anyway, actually on to Sudan. So it all starts with Omar al-Bashir, who was a military officer who came to power in a coup in 1989 with the aim of creating an Islamic state in Sudan.
Do you know Osama bin Laden used to hang out with him?
I'm not surprised.
So after he did his trip to Afghanistan to, you know, jihad and that, he decided he needed to leave, went to Sudan. He used to hang out with Omar. Apparently Omar was incredibly boring. He would just have all these important people like, you know, Osama and other people around for tea. And he would just lecture them on Islam. And Osama bin Laden would sit there and be like, but that's wrong, you retard. And just bring up like Quranically why stuff was wrong, and he'd just ignore him.
So
great governor.
That's quite funny. You would invite one of the most wanted men, who would at least go on to be one of the most wanted men in the world.
Yeah.
And then just lecture him and ignore him. Kind of based. No, not really. But yes, he came to power with the support of the military and Islamic groups, and he basically ignored them and centralized power on himself, which is a story as old as time in the Islamic world, isn't it? I know the Saudis did that at the very least. So he went on to implement Sharia law in the country, changed its legal and education systems, imposed things like dress codes, restricted the sale and consumption of alcohol. Not really too far off the mark with Sharia law. So moving on to February 2003, skipping a lot of time, two rebel groups, the Sudan Liberation Movement and the Justice and Equality Movement, which sounds very strange in the modern day, doesn't it? That makes it sound like a bunch of social justice warriors, but...
It's the thing about Africa, isn't it? Just like every new political group has some ridiculous, like, fluffy name. But what do? They murder people.
They do indeed. They began fighting against the government of Sudan, and they accused them of oppressing the Darfur region, where both of these movements are based in, as oppressing the non-Arab population. Because one thing you need to know about Sudan is it kind of intersects between the sort of more traditionally African world, I suppose you could say, and the Arabic one.
That's the north and the south.
Yes.
North FC being Arabs, love me Sharia, simple as, and South FC being a bunch of African softies.
You said it. So,
what are they going to do? Watch the show?
Maybe.
They don't have any internet in South Sudan. What are you mental?
I don't know about their internet status.
If you're from South Sudan, leave a comment. Let us know about how offended you are.
Probably very hungry at the minute, to be fair. So Around this time, al-Bashir was accused of harboring Islamic terrorist groups, as you alluded to earlier, by the International Criminal Court, who wished to charge him with war crimes for orchestrating the Darfur genocide, which began in 2003 and continued on for about a decade. And this targeted the Fur people. That's the name of the people, obviously. They weren't just really hairy. The Masalit and the Zagawa ethnic groups. You're laughing at genocide, are you?
No, I'm laughing at you being like, oh, don't worry, they weren't covered in fur. It's just a name.
You've got to qualify these things, Karen.
Yeah, I guess Cole Pilkington's watching. It's true.
If someone said they're a fur people, it makes you think of... Okay. So you've got to stop laughing now because...
Sorry, you're just funny.
this led to... the estimated deaths of 80,000 and don't laugh.
I'm not laughing.
Don't laugh at genocide.
Well, you know, not that one.
Yeah. I feel like I don't even want to say it now.
All right.
There's going to be some more death that you can laugh at later, but hold it in.
Okay.
But yes, this genocide led to the deaths of about 80,000 to even 400,000 people. And obviously it's very difficult to estimate the number of people killed in these sorts of things, but it was a significant portion, obviously horrific, despite Callum finding it funny, apparently.
I had nothing to do with it.
That's true, yeah. I am throwing you under the bus a bit. But moving on to the 9th of July 2011, South Sudan became its own independent country after it had a long and bloody civil war, which lasted all the way from 1955 to 2005. Quite a long civil war, isn't it?
That's a pretty good one.
A good one.
Yeah.
I told you there'd be more death that you can laugh at.
Well, it's just the case of, like, nobody alive remembers peace. Well, that's how weird civilizations live in.
I couldn't imagine just being in a constant state of war for your entire life.
You go and hang out with your granddad, even he just remembers war. Mm. War never changes, says granddad.
So this is estimated to have killed about 2 million people, so... Seems like Sudan is a very risky place to live if you are attached to living, which most people are. And eventually peace was signed in 2005, and eventually a referendum on independence occurred in 2011, which is why, believe it or not, they became an independent country, because, believe it or not, that massive long war meant that they didn't want to be a part of Sudan anymore, which is perfectly understandable, right? So... Moving on to Sudan and not South Sudan, after this had been going on, sort of in the 2010s, leading up to sort of 2020, a combination of things like economic mismanagement, corruption, and US sanctions led to, believe it or not, an economic crisis. Who'd have thought? So moving on to 2018, and the government decided to remove subsidies on goods such as bread, fuel, and medicine, and... Do you know what happened when the subsidies were removed, Callum?
It went back to the market price. It turned out the whole system wasn't real Islam.
Yeah. The prices shot up, so it's almost impossible for people to afford basic necessities of what happened, as with all price controls since the dawn of time, yet people still do them and suggest them. I'm looking at you, Liberal Democrats. So starting in December of 2018, protests began, which... spread to the whole country because, of course, the whole country was affected. And they were calling for al-Bashir's resignation and to end the corruption and to improve economic conditions, which seems fair enough, really, given the situation. And the government responded to the protests, believe it or not, by cracking down, using tear gas, arresting and dispersing the crowd, and also using, in some instances, live munitions. So in total, about 60 people were killed protesting the government. So moving on to the 11th of April 2019, and the military carried out a coup, another military coup, and they removed al-Bashir, arrested him and his officials, and established a transitional military council to govern the country. And this coup was the work of two men, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, remember that name, if you can, the commander of the military, and Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti which I'm not going to try and say because I'm afraid.
You got Mr. Gallows and Mr. Burham.
And he led the RSF, which is the Rapid Support Force, which is basically a paramilitary group that had previously been on the side of al-Bashir, but had since turned against him alongside the military. And Hemedti, I'm going to continue to butcher his name, by the way. I don't feel too bad. He's a pretty appalling person. And he's not going to see it, so it doesn't matter. is considered the richest man in Sudan, which isn't particularly what's the word?
Oh, that's a good
It's not a particularly good title, is it? I mean, it's like being the richest person on a desert island.
The king of the crack estate is not a bad title, my friend.
Mm-hmm. But he has a range of businesses, including a gold mine. And he also loaned out the RSF troops to foreign countries to earn a bit of money. So I think they were involved in the Saudis attacking Yemen. I think they got involved in that and he got a good paycheck for it. So, lovely guy. So, the military dictatorship, effectively, or the military council, as they called it, was criticised by civilians who were dissatisfied with the fact that the military continued to have control of the country, as it was seen as a form of continuity with the past regime, because, of course, the military and the RSF helped prop up al-Bashir, didn't they? And eventually, after civilian backlash, there was negotiation and a power-sharing agreement was reached between both the military council and the civilian opposition, and they established a civilian government which would be led by a prime minister drawn from the civilian population, and the government would be made up of both military and civilians. Which you think, well, that seems like a reasonable enough resolution, right? Well, in August 2019, Abdallah Hamdok, an economist, was appointed as Sudan's prime minister. I mean, it makes sense that he was an economist, considering their economic problems, right? And he formed a transitional government and, believe it or not, sought to reform the country, particularly addressing the economic concerns. Who'd have thought? Corruption and getting peace deals with rebel groups as well. And then moving on to the 25th of October, 2021. And what do you think happened here? A running theme throughout this entire story.
Coup.
Yes.
Yay.
The military and the RSS combined again to conduct another coup. I mean, why anyone trusts them at this point is beyond me. And they arrested the prime minister and his top ministers. And they justified the coup by citing the political instability in the country and the failure of the civilian-led transitional government to address the economic challenges. I mean, it's kind of a self-defeating thing, though, isn't it? Because if you inherit the situation of Sudan where you've got a basket case economy and in what, the space of 2 years, you haven't fixed it, I think that's a little bit of an excuse, right?
There's a fellow I met once. He used to live under communism in Slovakia. And he spoke about the fact that he was a bit annoyed at the transition to capitalism and whatnot because the new politicians that came in promised that they'd be as rich as Switzerland within 5 years.
And obviously people believe that?
Yeah, obviously impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But it just made me laugh because he was genuinely like, yeah, you know, it's I wish we'd get communism back because clearly this doesn't work. And I'm like, you're serious, aren't you? Right. Just a bit weird.
I don't really understand how he could be like, well, communism promised me a utopia, but they didn't deliver. In fact, it was a dystopia. But the capitalism, we're not Switzerland in 5 years. Give up on
Pack it in, get the military in.
Mm-hmm. Bit misguided, if you ask me. But this coup, believe it or not, again, led to widespread protests among the civilian population. And that led to the military releasing some of the detained officials, and they wanted to discuss potential resolutions with the civilian population to restore order again. However, a conflict between the two forces, the military and the RSF, the Rapid Response Force, began to emerge as there was an internationally supported plan to transition to, believe it or not, a more civilian-based political system, which would also reduce the military's political power, as well as subsuming the RSF into the military. So this made these two forces antagonistic to one another because, of course, this would in some ways give the military a bit more power, because then the RSF wouldn't exist anymore and all of their, you know, resources, soldiers would be part of the main military. And believe it or not, the leader of the RSF didn't like that idea, because that would reduce his power, wouldn't it? So after the 2021 coup, the RSF oriented itself towards being more on the side of the citizenry than the military. They were trying to distance themselves from them because they wanted to keep power, believe it or not. And the military also did possess valuable holdings in agriculture, trade, and industry, which it's a bit unusual for a military to have, basically, economic capture of a country. But I suppose it was a military dictatorship, so it does make sense. So that's what's going on at the minute, is a conflict between these two, I suppose, military groups, the actual supposed main military and the rapid, the RSF. And they are fighting amongst themselves to get power. And that's what is going on. That's what's causing all of this destabilization. And I wanted to have a quick look at how this conflict is being viewed by other countries, because as with all wars in the world now, they are all in almost all cases, proxy wars, because foreign interests always have their kind of horse to bet on, don't they? So much of the Arabic world wants to see a return to Islamic power in the region. They want to see, you know, the restoration of Sharia, maybe, which is not really a surprise, is it? And surprise, surprise, the West wants democracy. Bit naive, if you ask me. Don't think it's necessarily going to catch on in an area so destabilized. But Saudi Arabia and the UAE have billions of dollars invested in Sudanese agriculture. So they have a vested interest in making this end as quickly as possible, because, of course, they want their investments to be preserved. They don't want it to be wasted money. And the Russians also have a horse in the race, in that they're seeking to build a naval base in the Red Sea. And so they're quite keen to leverage the situation so that they can do so. And they do have good relations in the region. They're most friendly with the RSF, so that they're more siding with them than anything else. And I think the Russians actually offered to sell them weapons, like heavy weapons, and they actually turned them down for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why. I couldn't get to the bottom of that. But United Arab Emirates and Turkey also want to get a Red Sea port as well. So they're kind of supporting the Russians, because then if the Russians get one, maybe they can get one too, or maybe they can use the Russian port. Because, of course, 13% of all shipping passes through it. So pretty important port to hold, isn't it? And Egypt, of course, on the northern border, has a vested interest too, because the president is on friendly terms with the Sudanese military, himself being basically a military dictator. And they are quite keen to prevent the construction of a dam further down the Nile, because along the Nile goes all the way into Sudan, into Egypt, of course.
You kind of need the Nile water, or there's no Nile.
Yes. And the Egyptians are concerned that if they build this dam, they will stop being able to grow food properly. And obviously that is bad. So the Egyptians have a vested interest, and all of these foreign interests are basically competing to get as much out of Sudan as possible. And
I mean, the main thing I saw was that a lot of it was spurred on by the foreign interests. Like, I saw this mm-hmm. timeline of events in which the Russians agreed that, okay, we'll pay and we'll have this port. That'll be pretty cool. Thanks for that. And then the Americans started doing a load of visits to Sudan. Like, Victoria Nuland suddenly turned up. She just had to go to Sudan. Why not? And started talking publicly about how Sudan needs to move more towards democracy, which is, obvious dog whistles.
Mm, and that's gone so well, and then, exporting democracy in the past.
As soon as the port stuff was finished, then the coup happened. I was like, oh, okay.
Funny that, isn't it? I mean, there could be some funny goings on there. I can't speculate, because I don't really know enough about the inner workings of it, but America certainly does have a vested interest in keeping a lot of these powers out. So maybe some influence. I mean, it's not unheard of, is it? But
the American government helping coups? Nah.
Never heard of that before. But there have been, of course, some pretty serious consequences like this. Many civilians are fleeing. The BBC says 100,000 flee fighting, according to the UN. So, yes, obviously, when there is a war zone, people don't want to live in it. And so they have been displaced. And in a country as poor as Sudan, this could turn into a massive crisis where people starve to death, die of thirst, these sorts of things that we take for granted in the Western world. It's also worth mentioning as well that many of them are fleeing to neighbouring Chad, which to the Americans in the audience is a country and not a person. And yes, obviously quite a poor country in and of itself, so I'm not sure how much they can support that. And the attempts to offer aid to these people haven't gone too well, because many of the people have been held, I think, you move on to the next link, John. Here we have Sudan crisis. If humanitarian aid is looted, you cannot distribute it, the UN envoy in Sudan says, as staff are held at gunpoint. So even attempts at delivering aid to the citizens, as often happens in destabilized countries, it just gets captured by militias, rebel groups, the military, because of course...
food is power.
Yes, exactly. And so in many ways, it's creating these sort of flashpoints to create conflicts where they're delivering the aid, which has its own ethical concerns in and of itself. But of course, attempting to feed starving people isn't necessarily ignoble on its own. So finally, some, I suppose, good news. Leaders of Sudan's warring factions agreed to a 7-day ceasefire. This started on Wednesday, by the way, South Sudan says. So this is a ceasefire to try and negotiate some sort of peace deal or some sort of end to the fighting at the very least, because it has caused absolute chaos. Loads of people are fleeing. There were already, I think it was about 30% or a third, sorry, of the country was already struggling to feed itself before the fighting broke out. So one can only assume that a significant majority of the country cannot feed itself. So you can't even sustain a conflict in those conditions. So I think they've seen the writing on the wall and they're trying to come to some sort of resolution here, because it simply cannot continue unless, of course, the foreign powers decide to start shipping in food to keep it going, which is entirely possible because, of course, there are lots of interests intersecting in Sudan at the minute. So what do you make of the whole thing, Callum?
More proxy wars.
It is, yes.
Simple as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just business as normal, to be honest.
Mm, and I thought it'd be interesting to have a look at it because it is a good window into how foreign powers can use basically human tragedy to their own advantage. And lots of flowery words are used, like, oh, we have to help the people of Sudan. But more often than not, the government has another interest, in at least in the Western world, in that they want to stick it to the Ruskies and the Arabs and install themselves as having power in the region, right? So as with
all
any
the
of these...
Ruskies trying to stick it to the West as well.
Exactly. Well, it's a bi-directional thing, isn't it? Mm. But it seems like things have sort of ground down to a halt, and hopefully I would like to see things end, because I don't think the people of Sudan necessarily benefit from this going on. And it is a massive human tragedy that I think deserves to be understood, because we tend to get tunnel vision when talking about Western politics and how bad things really are. Like people crying when Donald Trump gets elected, when things could be a lot worse. I mean, you could live in Sudan and be starving or killed. And I think that perspective is a very important thing to have. And hopefully you have learned something about Sudan, and it's worth keeping an eye on what is going on, because there's always more than what it seems. There are lots of foreign powers jockeying for increasing their power here.
If you appreciated that segment from the podcast The Lotus Eaters, you can go to lotuseaters.com to get access to all the premium contents on the site, such as the premium articles, this one on the new sovereignty, with an audio track for silver and gold tiers, of course. If you'd like to find out what else is being put out, you can follow on Gitter at lotuseaters_com on Gitter. Thank you and goodbye.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.